podcast brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we discuss all the latest General Hospital, Days of Our Lives, The Young and the Restless, and the Bold and Beautiful News. So stay tuned. Welcome.
Hello.
Mike Jubonville, the man who gave up $1 drafts to be on this podcast, welcome.
Hola.
Pin a rose on his nose, child.
And then we have Jillian Bowe, who has not been smoking six packs a day, but is under the weather and still here. So welcome, Jillian. I hope you feel better.
You got that from me, bitch.
I did. Hi. I totally did. You said it before the podcast. I sound like I smoke six packs a day.
So, oh, my God.
I hope you feel better, Jillian.
Thank you. Somebody called me.
At least it's not snowing on you in New York. You had nice, beautiful weather this week, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was really great. But somebody called me, sir, when I answered the phone. I was like, your mama, who are you talking to?
It was a great week in soaps, but it was an even better week for Days of Our Lives, which got renewed for a 52nd season. Jamie, Ron is going to get a chance to really kick things into gear, having more time. We don't have to worry about cancellation like some people were. What are your thoughts on it getting renewed?
I think it's really great, and it's cool because it proves that NBC is less trigger-happy about getting rid of iconic daytime soap operas than the other networks were a few years ago. The reality of the ratings is that Days is much lower in the Nielsens than World Turns or Guiding Light or All My Children and One Life to Live were. But, you know, it's almost amazing how much the entertainment landscape has changed in just those few short years. I remember years ago people talking about really wishing that there was more attention being paid to delayed viewing, and that is happening now, and that there was more attention being paid to online viewing, and that's also happening now. So really, I guess in a lot of ways, the other shows didn't get to stick around to benefit from that. So yeah, I'm glad that NBC, you know, doesn't think that it will be, you know, super simple to bring on the Gong Show for daytime or in the replace a soap, because it, you know, people have seen that it won't be. I mean, you know, ABC fans in particular, you know, still, you know, bare their fangs whenever you mention the Chew. So it's not quite that easy. And I'm glad that it will give Days a chance to do what it does best, which is plan to save itself, you know? And now they have Ron Carlovati there who, unlike the head writers that Ken Corday tends to bring back over and over again, he actually does have some experience in, you know, spiking ratings on a soap opera, you know?
Ron is going to tear that show up. That show is so him.
So that, you know, that, and I pray if they have any sense, all of Ken's, you know, we're going to go back to the time when Days was a quiet family drama, that, you know, with those patented answers that he gives when he does interviews, he needs to throw that out and let his freak flag fly, because so much of his type of storytelling, we've talked about it for years, as it was happening on One Life to Live and GH, and people sometimes were happy, and then sometimes people were clutching their pearls. It's like, oh, well, that would be perfect on Days, and so now he is at Days, and I pray that they allow him to do what he does.
And you can let it fly, because at the end of the day, what does it – I mean, you've got nothing to lose.
What do they have to lose? First, you're right. Like what Mike said, they have nothing to lose at this point with 1.6 in the Nielsens. That's first of all. Second of all, Days of Our Lives has a long and storied history of batshit crazy storytelling. And I am not just meaning James E. Reilly. In the 80s, back way back in the 80s, they had, long before Faison donned a mask, they had, and I'm not saying I want masks, but I'm just saying as an example.
I was like, please stress that.
Andre DiMera was running around in a Roman Brady mask, murking up folks in Salem back in the 80s. So, I mean, this show, and they were hunting, you know, prisms and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, Stefano's Island and all of those other very, you know, when we interviewed Tom Racina in the early days of DC, it broke my heart to learn that they were basically cribbing off of GH, but, you know, they were. You know, Tom, you know, was like, yeah, we just kind of, you know, because pretty much a lot of those GH writers that helped do Luke and Laura and the Cassadines and all of that came over to Days and then went right on to do, you know, Roman and Marlena and Bo and Hope and the Cassadines, I mean, the Demiras. And I was like, oh, are you trying to say that they're not originals? But anyway, you know, so that, whereas GH had that after its crazy era, it had the Claire Labine era, you know, years later, where it became known as, you know, really powerful, thought-provoking, socially relevant storytelling. The last time Days was really socially relevant was back in the 70s when Bill Bell wrote it. And then for a little bit of time, they squeezed some stuff in with, you know, with Will Horton's coming out. But that was still told more for, you know, plot and intrigue than pure social relevance. So, you know, and of course, that one time Grandma Horton turned her house into an AIDS hospice and did like, 2 months later, it was gone. This isn't that soap. This is the soap where Hope Brady turned into a princess jewel thief at the stroke of midnight due to a microchip in her brain. This is a soap where Marlena Evans' soul was compromised by Satan because Stefano was hypnotizing her and calling her, sneaking into her penthouse and whispering that she was his queen of the night. And that left her soul.
I got the stuff that you want.
No.
It left her soul vulnerable to Satan, and she ended up turning into a panther cat and took off all of Kristen Blake's clothes and painted evil devil worshiping symbols all over it. I mean, this is that show. Oh, this is the show where Austin and Greta got trapped in a virtual reality garden of Eden.
We'll never forget the flying carpets.
Ooh,
yes,
just,
when Mike Horton laid pipe to Carrie so good, they pulled a Aladdin.
They pulled an Aladdin.
You know, so this is that soap, and they have to remember that and stop, because they don't do socially relevant.
They don't do socially relevant well, and they don't do small stuff well.
No.
Mike, you must be ecstatic because you do not have to worry about buying a new TV for at least another year. What do you think of the renewal news?
Well, ultimately, at the end of the day, soap staying on the air is always a good thing. I look at it as that they're giving Ron a chance to make something happen. And I am glad to see that NBC and Sony are going to invest in this and hope for the best. I mean, we know that YNR has come back to some writing that has not existed for a long time. And I hope that I applaud them for letting Days take this route. Go back to its roots. Ron is the guy to do it. We've been saying that for a long time. And I think a lot of fans knew that he was a good fit for this, but now he has the time to do it. So hopefully he can make something happen.
Jillian, what are your thoughts on the renewal?
I'm ecstatic for the renewal. I'm so happy for it because we don't need another show to die. And because to me, that just feels as though that'll just give ammunition for the others to be like, oh, we could cut these too. And for me, I feel as though this is put up or shut up time. And it's fantastic that they have Ron, like, You know, we all joked. I first joked and said that Ron is pretty much James Riley in a skinny boy suit, because some of the shit that he would pull, I'm like, this is so Riley. Like, this should be on Days. And a lot of soap fans said it too. When Ron was on GH, they would say, you know, I like Ron, liked him or hate him. They would say, he really should be on Days, because some of this could be on there. And it's not a slam against Days. It's just pointing out that this is in Days. This is Days' template. So I'm so happy that they've been renewed. I just can't wait to see what Ron is going to do. Like, I'm kind of like, it has me going back to reading up Days' history. And I'm just like, because I didn't start watching Days until I was like in 94, 95. So I'm just like, what is he going to pull off? Like, what shenanigans is he going to pull off? Like, it's going to.
But you kind of know, though, too, by going through the history, which.
Yes.
You'd be really good at.
Right. Right, but then at the same time, they have so much history and so much outlandish things. It's a lot. It's almost as if Ron is going to be like, ooh, I want to do this. But no, I want to, like, Ron is going to be like that kid. He's going to be like that fat kid with, hey, he's going to be like, ah.
You know, and like Riley, though, you know, one of the things that I want to mention, because whenever you hear about Riley, those that dismiss him always go, oh, devil possession, oh, buried alive. But like Ron, they're also writers that do a lot of, yes, they are plot-driven writers. There's no denying that they prefer the story over, you know, scene after scene of what's going on inside a character's head. But they also manage to do a lot of really good character and history moments. You know, mm-hmm. with Riley, he revisited Kate Roberts. Well, she wasn't Kate Roberts at the time, but Kate's long-ago affair with Bill Horton, and revealed that produced a child. I mean, there was a character on Kate who had an affair with Bill ahead of Laura going insane in the 70s. It was like this obscure storyline, and Riley came on and took that kernel of, you know, the Kate Roberts that they brought on with Deborah Adair wasn't supposed to be the same Kate that slept with Bill. It was a totally different character that they brought on with Lucas. And then Riley had the masterful thought of, well, what if we say that this Kate is that Kate? And then we're going to reveal that there was a baby produced, you know, and there's spoiled brat Lucas who thinks his dad was a military hero and is looking down his nose on Austin, his rival, has to find out, oh, not only are we have siblings and share a mother who happened to be a prostitute, not just the revered businesswoman that my spoiled butt thought I had as a mom. Oh, but also, my dad is not a dead military hero. He was a whoring around man who sent his wife to the nut house, and I'm a bastard son. I mean, and, you know, you had all of that really great character. I'll never forget Carrie being the one to go over to Kate's house and give her the little toys that, you know, it was some toy that Billy and Austin had and that Kate had already been talking about her kid having. And then, Carrie helped her put the pieces together that Billy and Austin, these street kids that she looked down her nose on, were her missing children that she thought her abusive husband killed. So Riley did a lot of that type of storytelling too. And Ron,
yeah.
With Paris, Texas, with Vicky, who would have ever thought Vicky would have got some good romance and pipe laying at that time in the game with old Charlie from Paris, Texas. I mean, you know, he did manage to infuse the show, and he loves the history of a show, you know, and I'd say
that's a good point. I think
he's 75-25 on a win. Yes. Now, sometimes there were some stinkers that came from history, like revisiting Pippa-Lala, but most of the time really great stories that he would do from bringing up the soap's history, you know. Like, I mean, my God, look at how many years General Hospital fans, and I really think a lot of them, you know, not to say that they did not have their right to their critique of Ron, because there were definitely things he did that deserved to be critiqued. But since I started blogging, and even before that, just as a fan of GH, all I kept hearing about from fans is how important Felicia and Bobby and Lucy and Scotty and characters like that were, and just people ripping the show to shreds because Guza and Jill Farren Phelps would not even, you know, they'd bring Felicia back for one day for Maxie to tell her she was a horrible mother and ship her off again. You know, one of the first things that Ron did was start bringing all of those people back. You know, now, yes, that also led to a situation where, you know, people were like, oh, the show is top heavy. There's too many characters. But here's where how you deal with that. You get rid of all the ones that nobody wants to see but the executives and the the networks, and you play the veterans because, you know, now if even still at GH, all of those characters that he brought back for the 50th are still in play. There, you know, there would be no Felicia to go find out what's going on with Nell, or Bobby to go to figure out that Nell is scheming, or Lucy to uncharacteristically want to sell the hospital or all the crazy stuff they've got going. Then you wouldn't even have those characters there to begin with if Ron hadn't, you know, if it's not, because Frank, look, the executive producer is not going to come in and say, you know, I'd really like to bring back somebody from the 80s that fans love. That's a writer. That's a writer who's saying that. That's a writer who is the one having that vision. And the good thing is Days pretty much has a good chunk of their popular characters from the 80s on, you know, and a good bit of the ones from the 90s. So now he just has to write for them in character and things that make sense, you know, unlike what we see now with this Chloe Nicole baby shit.
Which was terrible, which is why I do not want to discuss it this last week because it was painful to watch. Mike, what did you think? Mike, what did you think of Doug and Julie? Julie got to show out at a funeral this week for David Banning. Eli showed up. What were your thoughts on how that all played out?
I felt like I was watching a show that I had missed for a very long time. I can appreciate the emotional connection that Julie had with David, but the fact that he hasn't and nobody's talked about him, they spent an inordinate amount of time on a funeral and eulogies and all kinds of warm, fuzzy family moments that really meant nothing to me. And I think on the other end, when I was watching Eli and Valerie, I just felt like she should have been more angry than she was. And you know, I get that the kid is upset that he didn't know his father, but Valerie has or had seemingly a valid reason for doing what she did. And the fact is the guy that she was with accepted the role of the father. So should she have maybe mentioned it earlier? Yeah, maybe so. But she just felt more guilty than she did angry that she gave this guy a decent life, as did the man she was married to. So I just found it very, it just didn't seem to make sense. You know, Days does this thing sometimes where I really think that it's going really strong, and then it does just weird shit like this. It made no sense that they spent this much time on a funeral.
Okay, so I get what you're saying about, you know, the fact that it, because I agree totally, that Dina Higley is known for this. It's like you kill off a character off screen and, you know, from
it
the moment.
Better to see it play out with David and the son.
Yes, I totally agree. To me, it's tantamount to, you know, Jeff Weber having a daughter from an affair, and they play that story without Jeff Weber and the woman he had an affair with. That's to me is sloppy, you know, and why
well, they
should...
did play it with the woman he did, but they just never showed.
No, I'm talking about,
wife.
Yeah, oh. No, the woman he had, I said the woman he had the affair on, the mother, you know.
I thought you said with.
No.
Oh, this is mother.
Cares? Yeah, no, who cares about Robin Riker in that?
It's like, I was like, you know, sorry, you blame the floor on,
no, you cheated on Elizabeth's mother, and you play this big story without them. And, you know, with Days, yes, there are a ton of Hortons on the show, and, you know, they call themselves giving Julie a story out of this, but it rang hollow with her screaming her reactions and hope, you know, well, you know, David put up
Hope
walls.
Hope was sick?
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, I didn't like that part of it. But I do think that Eli has a right, you know, to rip into his mother regardless of
I mean, him, ultimately, you know, yeah, you're right. But the other end, like, she has a right to rip back into him as well.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing that I find with soaps is that is always a little bit disconcerting for me is, in the interest of storyline, you'll have characters like Eli coming on who may have had decent relationships with the father or mother that raised them that may not have been their biological parent. But then in the interest of storyline, that person is shoved aside in many cases, and what the things that they did for them were shoved aside. And instead, it's all about this new parent. And ironically, the one show that did that really well, I mean, that actually did it, told both stories really well, was All My Children with Tad and JR. But a lot of times, soaps just are like, well, let's get the person who raised you and go for the person who is the biological, because you never knew that.
I'm not going to let you give All My Children that many cookies about that story, because as someone who watched the whole story, Tad was that boy's daddy figure his whole life, and then when they sore-assed Jacob Young into the role, he immediately had all of this Adam love and I hate Tad that was very plot-driven, too. So they made those mistakes,
too. There was that with All My Children, but the thing that I thought was always a through line, and I'm actually defending Tad, which is something I don't think I've ever done in 10 years on this podcast.
No, because you never understood that the Martins were the core of the show, so that's why I'm like...
But what I'm saying is, Tad, even though JR had those feelings, they had the other side of the storyline being told where Tad was like, we need to save our son.
He was always unconditionally, you know, supportive, usually. But back to the Eli thing, though. Let me, as someone who comes from illegitimacy, and, you know, you came from a happy home with Ma and Pa and everybody. Let me just say, no, those emotions never go away. And, you know, it does not matter who raised you. You can have a lot of love and support. I love my grandparents dearly, but at 40 years old, I still wrestle with animosity at times against my parents, my biological parents. I mean, I've prayed about it, moved on about it, screamed about it, yelled about it. We all love each other because we're black and we go to church, and that's what we do. We don't go to therapy. We just eat our feelings and let Jesus and brown liquor heal us. But I will say, he does have a right to be furious with his mother for lying to him about his paternity. The thing of it is, like Mike is saying, it should not have been played in a vacuum. It would have been a much better story had they taken a look at the cast lists of Guiding Light and As the World Turns and just threw a dart at any guy over 50 and said, Robert Newman, Grant Alexander, and said, well, we're going to bring one of these cats on as David. Because, you know, I don't know what the real David is doing. I don't know what he looks like these days. A lot of times that matters.
Okay, so who does Rick... Okay, I told y'all I only started watching in 94. So David Banning, that was Julie's kid, right?
Yes.
So who the hell was Rick Hurst's character?
That is his son Scott. That's why, I'll be honest. Okay, so a lot of this has the one of the things that's made it hollow for me is how they're already playing fast and loose with time. And I don't have a problem with sore-assing, but de-sore-assing is more problematic. And that's what they're doing here. Because David Banning, you know, really them sore-assing his son Scott to the age of Rick Hurst in the late 80s throws this whole story off for me, because we all know, but you know, Days isn't relying on that. They're thinking, well, maybe their fans just watch Days. Unfortunately, we watch the other soaps, and we know that Rick Hurst is now a silver fox. So you want us to believe, you know, Valerie and David Banning were pretty much the same age. You know, that storyline, her family took him in after he ran away from Salem and, you know, injured himself. And that's how they fell in love. And they were both like young star-crossed lovers. So Valerie and David would be the same age. So basically we're trying to say Vanessa Williams is old enough to be Rick Hurst's mama and that she has an illegitimate child that's
oh, don't do that. Well,
I guess the thing
do that. That's so painful.
Well, I guess the thing is
okay, so I'm
in these particular stories a lot, the parent is always apologetic. And I think what was missing for me was that Valerie did not reiterate the struggle of what it was like to be in a relationship at that time so that he understood. He has a right to his anger. I get it. But she has a right to be mad at him as well. Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah.
It was way too one-sided. And her just sitting there in her tears with Abe later just – it ruined.
Yeah, she should be conveying that,
he's a fighter.
That there was a lot of shit that happened when you were in an interracial relationship. She's alluded to that when she discusses it with Jennifer. But even that rings hollow for me because I'm like, well, Vanessa Williams is not.
If you're
that
strong
to
be in that relationship at that time, then you are stronger than crying in Horton Square. In your coffee.
Not necessarily, because there's a lot of hard emotions that go with, it having dealt with racism in a relationship in the past. You can be strong about one thing and then still weak about other things. To me, that's just human nature. I mean, to me, it would have been better if they cast David and didn't play this. But this is how Dina works. Dina's lazy. Right. This is how, when Dina put, I say it over and over again. I've been praying for a Shane and Kim reunion for years, and it's like Luke's category at the end of the year. Be careful what you wish for, because when Dina Hickley put Shane and Kim, one of the most iconic Days of Our Lives super couples, back together, she did it in a. She put them back together in a week. She put Shane and Kim
thank you, ma'am.
Together. That's how she thinks. It's like, what? I'm mad at you because you've been off spying. Kimberly, my darling, I'm sorry. Okay, all's forgiven. Give me some sugar, Britt.
Well, she did the same thing with Teresa. They had that ugly history for so long, and then when Teresa was going to go back to the drug lord, it was like all of a sudden
Shane,
she was supportive and fearful. Yeah.
Her father, the greatest super spy this side of Robert Scorpio, who once had secret rooms filled with technology, if Shane would have been on the case, we would have been able to stop the Russian hackers. He's like, I'm sorry, my darling, you're going to have to go with the drug dealer because daddy can't help you. Ooh, they're just too bad for daddy this time. I'm like, wait a minute. Shane Donovan couldn't stop some petty drug dealer from snatching up his baby girl. Shane is all, I'm sorry.
Ron, Teresa.
Sucks to be
Teresa
you, girl.
Is one character Ron could write the hell out of.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have a wish list. I mean, I definitely uh-huh. want him to restore Chloe and Nicole because I love both characters.
You know what? I think this is like, I hate to say Dina's Nicole because I remember I've never been, sorry, Luke, a huge Sammy fan. But when Dina was writing before and Sammy was a soppy, crying mess every day, I couldn't take it. I just could not take
it. Oh, it was terrible.
So this is something that will go away.
Dina loves to do baby switches. That is, that's in her wheelhouse. When in doubt, let's switch up or steal some babies. I don't know if she loved Easter egg hunts as a kid, as a girl. I just have visions of her on Easter Sunday in a yellow lilac dress. Ooh, I get to find some eggs.
My egg. No, it's not. It's mine.
And I can just see her switching the little children's eggs. It's going to be such fun. Because that's her go-to storyline.
I'm just kind of confused here. Okay. So David Banning was Julie's son. So yeah. Scotty Banning was his son, right?
With Trish Clayton, played by Patty Weaver. I said Gina Roma.
Gina Roma.
Okay, and so this kid is Scotty's son or David's son?
This kid is David's son.
David and Valerie.
Eli
and Scotty are brothers?
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, yes, he has a brother who is 20 years older than him. And yeah, it's all wonky. They really should have just, in my opinion, especially since they didn't look. I ain't trying to keep a sister from having a job because I like Vanessa Williams. Look, I still remember the old Melrose Place theme song, you know, where she dancing in the middle. And I used to be like, why the black girl got to be the only one? You know, everybody else is throwing hair, you know, doing giving soap.
Yes, tossing good soap.
Cut to Rhonda and she jigging. I was like, why we got to dance all the damn time? We don't just get up in the morning dancing.
If it was any consolation, One Life to Live had the white people dancing when it was on Prospect Park.
They had everybody dancing. It would have made better soap sense for somebody at Days to say, let's bring back Rick Hurst and do a story with Julie. Because when Rick Hurst left the show, he was married to Melinda Clark, who went on to freaking super fame with the OC. And I'm like, we could have had Scotty and Faith back. You know, they were essential to Patch and Kayla's story because Patch helped take down her cult leader father. You know, they did a cult with Little Slow Joey. No reference to that. Yeah, it's like, why not? When you sore ass, you kind of got to keep that in mind because they already messed it up a little bit because David Banning and Mike Horton were rivals when they were boys. But then when they brought on Scotty, because they sore-assed Scotty so much older, they gave that rivalry. Mike then became a rival to Scotty, David's son. And, you know, the whole time you're looking at Susan Seaforth Hayes, and I know she has to be thinking when they brought on Rick Hurst as her grandson, like, what? Really? I'm only in my 40s, bitch, at the time. And so now, you know, this makes more sense visually right now that Julie would have a grandson this age. But Julie raised Hope. So she's old enough to have great grandchildren and it's just wonky. And you know, it isn't doing Julie to me, it's like, is this doing the actress a service on the show or a disservice? Marlena's relationship with Will under Chandler Massey was a service to Deirdre Hall. This is doing a disservice, in my opinion, so far to Susan Seaforth Hayes because she's just having these overly histrionic reactions all over the place. Oh, why didn't the gods take me? Whoa! And it's just, like Luke said and like Micah said, she's having these reactions for a character we haven't heard about ever. It's more of the same, like with the bringing back the Martins with a one-word sentence and no flashbacks. Oh, there were these fabulous family, the Martins, and I was their enemy. Let's buy their house and have a party in it. It's like, that's not doing service to history. The way you do service to history on soaps is you give Jill Abbott a heart attack, and she's laying in that bed, and she flashes back to Kay telling her, I told you that Aussie was a piece of shit, girl! And you have to have her contend with that, and you have that visceral reaction to the history. Or like what Sally's doing with Scotty. Her son, Scotty, who hasn't been mentioned a lot in years, goes missing, but Lauren says, I have this issue with him being in danger so much because of the fact that he was kidnapped when I was... And so fans are like, shit! Sheila Carter mentioned!
Oh, my God.
Let's just lazily...
Sheila's coming back.
Julie's all talking loud on her cell phone like Adele. Hello? Hello? It's me. Oh, Scott is dead! David is dead, y'all! Oh, it was some Tyler Perry stuff. Man, okay.
Well, Jamie mentioned disservices. Jillian, watching General Hospital, Olivia Jerome and Sam this week, boy, is that a disservice. What are you thinking of what's going on with your girl?
Oh, my God. Sam made me mad, though. Like, I mean, Sam is a G. Y'all know that's my girl. She a G. I loved when she punched Olivia. She figured it out. I was hoping that Sam figured, but obviously you needed it for drama. I was hoping Sam figured it out to herself and didn't say nothing and then booked it. But obviously for drama reasons, she couldn't do that. But I
would disagree with it being drama, but go ahead. Carry on.
Well, that's you. Okay, good. So I liked when Sam was on that bridge. Sam said, baby or not, big belly or not, I'm going to fight this motherfucker. And when she wrestled with that gun and punched in her face, I was like, that's my girl. She was like, ain't no baby slowing me down. I was mad that she made that little speech to her after she punched her on the bridge. I'm like, Sam, punch her and then run your ass into the car. Olivia is just too, look, Eileen, what's your name now? Tonya Walker Davidson, Harley Davidson. I ain't got no beef with you, but she just is a little, you know, she's just a little bit too much.
Over the top?
Her acting style is very 1980s.
Yeah, it's like 1990s. No more dead babies on my wall. I was like, oh, girl. Oh, my God.
Iyad was like Iyad, but not on my watch.
Yes, she was just too much. Like, oh, God. She's just a little bit too, she's just so campy. I understand it's a soap, and you're supposed to be doing, you know, outlandish things, but damn, like, she was just a bit too team much. And I'm just hoping that her reign of terror ends soon. I'm still mad as fuck that none of them in that town know what the hell she looked like. I'm like, Alexis, you mean to tell me you weren't a little bit curious?
Oh, my God, Luke. I had a Luke moment because y'all remember when the new All My Children launched. I giggled at myself watching. Luckily, I didn't tweet it because I would have gotten pounced by Luke for hypocrisy. But, you know, Luke had a hard time.
As long as you're willing to admit it on the
podcast.
I'm
admitting it, but I didn't put it. Write it down. So I'm only guilty in my mind because I'm about it. When Luke had such a hard time with little Bianca daughter, whatever her name was, Milka Magnesia, whatever. She didn't know that her daddy was, you know, a famous wealthy rapist. But his big thing was she never Googled herself or her parents, and so I'll give you that. But
that's different to me.
I see the same thing because I was sitting there. Because Alexis, you mean to tell me Alexis is an attorney, and when you're starting to get cozy with somebody, you didn't Google that, you know, let me check and see my
thing. Right. That's
hipster hairdo, but let me check. And, you know, would think his sister would have come up when she clicked, when she talked to Julian Jerome.
But how is that like All My Children did? Wait, now hold up. I'm asking that because I'm like, did Bianca ever tell
him? It was a parallel because Bianca, his beef was that why didn't
Miranda
Googled her daddy's name? And then
did Miranda know who her father was at that point?
No, but a kid would.
There you go.
But a kid would still.
But all she has to do is Google her mother.
Or, you know, would want to learn about who her mom and daddy was, you know, but. So, yeah, I will say I had a moment where I'm like, okay, that's why.
Well, she's a rape victim. I didn't think they were going to have it in the paper, but whatever.
But a kid is still going to be curious. A kid is
With the lawsuit and him hanging on a hook and all the other stuff.
You know.
You could have totally Googled him.
I agree with Luke years ago. No, I didn't agree.
Well, thank you, Jamie. I appreciate it.
I'll come back and say, you know, there's nothing wrong with TV shows about time travel.
Like, my thing is, you know, but, like, Alex, you know, Sam finally knows who her dad is. You mean to tell me Sam doesn't, like, you know, who else is your family and looks up, you know, he shows.
Hello, you're a detective.
You know, I'm like, what type of.
Her mama's a lawyer, but, you know, but none of them are Googling anything about. But, you know, Sam did figure it out. It was just too late. She's in the car.
Yeah.
And, then, you know, they're also, GH is very big on these symbols. So, you know, they had to make it about those little symbols, the Jason and Sam symbols, I'm not going to hate on that. I'm not going to hate on that because, you know, my characters, my favorite character, look, Luke, you know, Carly and Jack had their compass on World Turns. And, you know, that made carjackers tear up. You know, anytime Bo and Hope talk about that damn boat, you know, I'm like, oh, the fancy face. There's symbols that make, and you know, for Jason and Sam, that phoenix dragon and what's the other one? The two little dragons.
Two little figurines, yeah.
And so that was, I will say, I thought that was some sharp writing where Olivia was like, do you know what those symbols mean? And Sam is like, yeah, bitch, I know. You my dad, ain't it? Get me out of this car, ho! And then Olivia just slung her off the bridge.
Yes!
You know, I would say is the thing. I'm not really happy with this whole... Because I just feel GH... Look,
organic.
I know starting in July. No. Look, some fan was like, well, Jamie, are you going to still have your anger about Return from the Dead? And I started laughing. Because, look, no. Acceptance is a big part of mental health. I am pretty sure that Ron Carlovati it might look like The Walking Dead over in Salem. I have already accepted that. But with GH...
That was fun.
With GH, I feel that they do need to kind of do a moratorium, because now I feel like they're running out of characters that died as a part of the whole Anna, Duke, Robert story. Like, everybody who died during this story is still alive. Why are Jason and Huggy Bear even having to go?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, meanwhile, while Sam is facing down Olivia, Jason is in a mausoleum cracking open a tomb.
Curtis is the only one in this town who should be able to plausibly say, this is insane! This woman died 20 years ago! Sonny being that, like, are you really sick? I'm like,
yeah,
Sonny, you...
They're making Sonny the dumb mobster.
I'm like, Sonny, you have filed taxes in Port Charles, New York for 30 years now, bro. You know, it's like, you should have been like, I bet you she... You know, he's like, are we really thinking? Are we really trying to say that maybe... She's not dead? It's like, why is anybody who's been there for the last 20 years shook about somebody not being dead?
Yeah, so Anna should hire Sam to investigate whether Duke is really dead.
Don't do that. No. Don't you do that.
I think where they're going is the obvious. You know, as soon as I read that Anna and Duke had a baby that died, I'm like, you know they're about to make Priest Daddy Pants that baby.
Totally
where they're going.
I am not going to be here for that, because that was the catalyst that made Anna just snap her shit and just say, fuck this bitch. Like, I'm
Why
not here for that.
Anna and little Robin's little, you know, wind up doll be so interested in him. And, you know,
because I feel as though they're going to, well, I know they're going to do that because they also want to make him viable on the canvas, because, I mean, without.
Just write a fucking story for him. Ooh, sorry.
Without Charlotte, with Charlotte and Claudette, who is, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't, he doesn't really have anything. But
And to his fans who have been mad at me ever since, look, you know, it's so funny. It's like, sometimes I just rant on Twitter because I'm watching and I'm upset. So a lot of them are like, they've screen capped this tweet when someone was like, do you like Griffin? And I was like, no, he's a himbo. They're all himbos. I'm sick of himbos. And look, I might not have had my Xanax yet, y'all. But I will say this, because it's like I'm getting tweeted every few so often about that tweet. And they had, you know, it's earmarked December 2016. I'm like, come on, y'all, let it go. And it's like, I guess Jamie didn't know about his long resume on Supernatural. I'm like, I didn't say that the man himself was not viable as a human being, as an actor. The character comes off as a himbo. I know Twitter only has 140 characters, but... Yes, Matt Cohen might one day give Streep a run for her money. I have no problem with Matt Cohen. I have a problem with how the character has been written. I don't see him as viable.
I agree. He's a young romantic lead in a doctor role, and they're not doing anything.
It's like they basically wrote down, let's figure out every way possible to hobble him by his viability. Let's make him a priest. Let's let him not penetrate anyone in current story, although he penetrated someone off canvas in the past, someone who's also a newbie, and let's let him think he's her baby daddy, and then let's reveal that four other men might be the baby daddy.
A priest to absolve Sonny.
And why is he a priest anyway? That's just such... Well, unless you're going to do the Thornbirds, unless you're going to do like on Sunset Beach... Which did the best. Ooh, Sunset Beach did it. Look, I love...
Sunset Beach did it
well. Sunset Beach, when they had that little Latina woman dating one brother, but she was in love with his priest brother, and she would always be grabbing her chest, and the priest would take off his, like, he'd be taking off his priest shirt and his priest collar thing, and he'd be dripping in sweat thinking about that woman.
Called a collar, but okay.
And, I'm Baptist, oh well. So, you know, it's oh my God, it was so hot. And then Eric Brady was a hot priest. But then the whole point of having a hot priest on a show is
It's difficult.
My thing is, I thought they were going to have him. They had it looking like he was going to go after Maxie, and then they dropped that. And then I thought maybe he was going to be like a mob doctor for Sonny. Like, he was going to be drawn into it because of Sonny's connection with Duke. Like, they don't know. To me, this is what I feel, and this is what I feel. Me over here, the one who sounds like she smoked six packs of Newports a day.
Attica.
I feel as though, shut up, you. I feel as though that.
You know it would be Virginia Slim.
Benson and Hedges menthol.
Marlboro.
Right? Like, I feel as though they looked at the canvas and they realized they don't have anything to do with him. And Frank was like, tie him to somebody. And they're going to think. And Frank did what Jill Farren Phelps did, you know, with Dylan. He's a preacher. He's a baker. He's the butcher. He's the bread maker. He's the candlestick maker. Like, they don't know what to do. And now they're
and
like,
that's why
that's why,
because a lot of it, you know, in that argument that I had on Twitter that day, it was about my girl, my Elizabeth. And, you know, a lot of them want, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I guess I know too much inside baseball, but I'm like, yeah, fine. As a fan, you might look at it and say, oh, I could totally see them being a couple for the ages. Well, you're saying that, and I don't want Liz with Franco because he's evil. And I'm like, okay, fine, I get that. But I'm seeing how these people really think, which is, yeah, they'd put Liz with him, and they'd be Dante and Lulu the sequel. They'd be the happy, boring-ass
They're too young to
couple.
Be a romance for the ages.
And then he would just be going to play baseball with that Tribe Called Quest of kid she has, and there would be no story for her. Whereas with Franco, she's front and center. So I'm like, y'all say y'all a Liz fan, but y'all want her with somebody that is basically floating, that Gene and Shelley have not even taken out one legal sheet of paper.
They don't know what
they ain't
to put, do
they
with
ain't, I guarantee they ain't took out a legal size piece of paper and wrote Griffin at the top of the page, and they ain't been able to get all the way down to the bottom.
I just really hope they don't do this he is Duke's son crap thing, because with Anna, I was gonna say with Anna, you know, because that was a key piece of history, and that Gene and Shelley are just gonna shit, like, they have already shitted on history.
Is that a surprise?
I mean, but
to you?
Still, like, something, I mean, you know, I know
they're
you
not
know,
good with history, they're not that, good
no,
with
they're terrible they're with history, it,
and
they're terrible in Jillian.
And wait till y'all see the reveal of why Nell hates Carly. Child, I'm gonna stay off Twitter that day. I already said, you know, I've been getting back in my knowing shit game, but I tell you what I learned, I'm not gonna spoil it, but let me just say, it is
I want you to spoil
it's not
me.
Like Jillian
no,
always
no.
says, it better
no,
be
I'm
good.
Not gonna spoil it for the readers, and it is underwhelming, to say the least.
Is there any surprise
no,
in this?
Not.
Though every storyline that they've had where that pulls on history, they get the characters wrong or it underwhelms.
It is underwhelming
every time.
But
I will
say this again, and I've been saying it because, you know, comparatively speaking, and no, Luke, you're right. I do believe that it shouldn't just be compared to the others, but I do have to go here. The storyline leading up to Olivia's reveal, I do feel engaged watching the story. I do feel engaged watching the fight for.
I don't know what she's
going to
do.
The hospital. Even though there are parts of everything with the Gene and Shelley stuff that I scratch my head at, or that I'm yelling at the TV that I don't think this is right. Like, I don't think Lucy would be involved in trying to take down the hospital. I do find it compelling that Hayden, Monica, and Tracy teamed up to save the hospital with Laura, who got in the parking lot. by some swarthy foreign villain who wants to think, you know, that Olivia wants the hospital because she's using it to rebuild her mob fortune, and that Julian, you know, a lot of this is to save Julian because now it can be, I loved you, Olivia.
It was only one character.
No, like, no,
gonna,
I can't
you're
see
gonna
how
dismantle the entire.
I agree with you, Dillian. If I was Alexis, I wouldn't take him back. I'd be like, boy, I don't care what your sister told me to do. You were about to slice me like a cod. But that's what they're doing.
Not only that, but not only that, like, I can't see. I see that they're trying to do that, but I can't see. Okay, let's take the killing Alexis part out of it. I can't see how Alexis would still have this man in her life when this woman who was a threat has threatened, you know, has done all these things.
I totally agree with you, but this is
the biggest attempt for them to rewrite a character since they did it with Frank.
I see what you're saying. You're speaking with logic, which after all these years of watching soaps, I applaud you for still applying logic, but this screams...
Jimmy, it had to happen sometime.
Yeah, all this screams of let's get Julian off the hook by revealing that his campy sister told him, you better slice and dice Alexis, and then Alexis would go, I can't believe you were going to kill me! I would have never gone through it if Sonny hadn't have shown up! Yes, you would have! I saw it in your eyes! Look at these abs! Okay, I'll forgive you!
Oh my God, and I hope Nancy, listen, okay, hold up. I just hope, Nancy girl, hey, how you doing? How you doing, girl? I hope she's listening, and I hope she busts in that writer's room and say, what the fuck are y'all doing? Because
I hope she says, I'm sorry, Ron, I'm sorry.
I wonder how many of those actors,
I could think of one.
All kinds of shady things. I mean, there's a whole list of them.
I could think of one.
I'll bet right about now there are a good 10 to 15 actors who cheated Ron in a very good long time.
All I will tell you guys is this. I won't name any names, but I've heard some actors, listen to me with my Luke Kerr voice. I've heard that some actors that were...
It's not a Luke Kerr voice because I don't...
that we know of. Because some of the shit you say, boy, I've heard that some of the actors that were instrumental in that were Shade and Ron. I've heard some of them have been like, fuck, like, what did we do? Like,
ain't always green, though. Green on the side of a final draft script.
I have something positive to say about
that Anna, I'm sorry, Mike, I'll let you get back to you.
It's okay.
But I hope that, like, this is the thing that's boggling my mind. Anna and Olivia, they're gonna have to interact, and Anna is not at her top form to bust Olivia's ass. So I feel, you know, I love the, you know, the, I find it's apropos that Anna of all people has this rare cancer, because, you know, I guess it's gonna, I guess it's showing people that they don't have to slow down from what they're doing, but at the same time, you kind of, like, I don't know, I still have to study up.
I wouldn't be surprised if Anna and Olivia never had
But here's the thing.
Anna has to be on her tip. Like, I find it, what I'm trying to say is it's kind of weird that they have Anna out of commission and her, one of her biggest rivals, is walking around with some shitty.
Well, Valentine.
I interviewed Finola Hughes about this story. And she basically, this is going to show that, as in real life, cancer diagnoses don't always happen at the most opportune time when you have the time to just be holistic and go, sometimes in life, you know, I mean, this is a reality. You know, if this was real life and she was a mother of four who is a soccer mom and on the board of directors of a fundraising association and running a job and having a husband, and then she goes and gets a doctor's appointment, this could happen. This does happen to people in real life where cancer hobbles your life. And so that's one of the things I asked was, well, you know, Anna's pretty much the only thing keeping poor Charles away from total annihilation any given day. How is she going to balance that? And she has been assured by the writing brass and the, that it's not going to be, this isn't going to hobble Anna. This is not, yes, she now has a chronic condition, but so does Robin. And, you know, Robin has helped save poor Charles a couple of times with her chronic condition.
Okay.
And I actually think that it's super smart the way that they've done it, because Olivia, you know, while Anna was resting in her hospital room, you know, Robin took the police officer away from the door, which, you know, yeah, that's plot. But, you know, some, you know, you have to, plot is not always a dirty word. Plot is not, you know, you do have to have plot. So, but I did think it was kind of like, okay, Robin, you know, your mama, you know, is out of the vein. First of all, they got this old guy up there. I'm like, he can't protect Anna from nobody. But really, he's not supposed to be protecting her. He's supposed, because they don't know Anna's in danger. He's supposed to escort Anna to the police station because Nina then called crime.
Nina has put in her petty. Nina is me. Nina's like, I give a damn out of that bitch.
I thought that that was really clever that there's Olivia. Who it would be a little more sensical if she was wearing a wig or something, but the fact that she's just walking around with her blonde hair, like, don't nobody know me.
And glasses, and glasses, and glasses, and glasses, and glasses.
No, I'm okay with that, because when people walk around in dark sunglasses and in dark clothes, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, you know, but she doesn't try to disguise her.
Wait, can I say something positive about
that? Well, I'm going to finish this, and then I'll go. We'll go to Mike. But, you know, they did show that, you know, she showed up for the board meeting to find out the hospital's fate, and then she overheard, which I'm like, all these doctors are breaking all kind of HIPAA violations. But he was like, this orderly yells loudly, Anna Devane is in room.
Yeah.
And but that's so the thing. There's no nurses or anybody watching the show. So these are people that are not qualified and trained.
Well, the nurses are on strike anyway.
Right,
but, you know,
yeah.
So and they did show Olivia pull out her shank and try to head on in to Anna's room. But Robin, baby, Robin, look, Robin been saving her mom and daddy for 20 years, seemed like. so Robin came back just in the nick of time. But did you hear what Anna said when Robin came in the room? Anna said, I don't know, something happened and I had a jolt of adrenaline already and something was fixing to happen.
That's right.
So I'm not worried about Anna. Anna got the PV, but let me tell you, she was finna put them ham bones on Olivia Gyron.
She was gonna grab, that phone and beat her ass with it.
Around Olivia Jerome's throat, it would have been all over with the
shouting.
I do
want to
know,
Mike, what did you think was good about General Hospital this week?
Well, overall, I think it was better, but you know, the highlight for me, if I can say something positive, was Anna and Robin, and the appropriate flashbacks, and the fact that Kimberly McCullough's back and she's filling this role and she's giving Anna something to hope for. Their dynamic. You know, we've talked about if she doesn't want to come back, recasting the character. But watching those two together, it's very, very hard for me to believe that there's another actress out there that could capture their magic. And it's palpable when I watch those two together.
No, she's Robin forever. She really
I get it, but I'm just saying that.
Pregnant. And
they wrote in her pregnancy.
Written.
I
they
thought that
wrote
was
it
cool.
In. I'm like, oh, no, Robin, go have another baby.
I want to know what his deal is with Anna so bad. She curbed
because
he
wouldn't date her. She wouldn't date him back.
No,
when
it's got to be more than that. She put him on the kill list, and he won't tell her why. She doesn't remember.
He's playing, you know, and I love the fact that, you know, we didn't record the podcast when it came out, but when Nina was like, you're so obsessed with him. And Anna, I love her. Fanola is such a G. Her and Stafford's head up is going to be so epic. I liked what she told when she just laughed at Nina and was like, no. He's obsessed with me.
Oh, get it. I love it. Yeah. She did the Tony Braxton. Your man is obsessed with me, girl. Why your man calling me? Hey, I love it.
And first, Nina was like, and then now Nina's like, oh, this bitch ain't lying. Like, she broke into
Nina's head up too. And I, you know, Nina as this cold Cassadine wife who is like, why are you looking at that when you got a baby with that one? Why are you acting this way? I'm really starting to like them.
I get why, but see, a lot of people dislike her, but I understand. Like, Nina's character at her at her soul. It's like her mother did these horrible things to her. She was in a coma for 20 years during those formative years. So, of course, she's going to be insecure.
I'm gonna tell you, Mike, just
and it
put
makes total sense that she acts the way she does.
You know what, Mike, I love you to death, but I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm the one who defends the show the most, but you just, that much thought hadn't been put in how to portray Nina since Ron left. Jean is sitting there going, wow.
I am talking about the criticism toward the actress that plays the role. That's
yeah, the actress is probably having to do a lot of work because Gene and Shelley don't like to fool with his.
Michelle Stafford is putting in work in that character, and now you just summed it up.
She's like, Colin, hey, Gene, we need the new breakdowns. Okay, let me log off of here, Dog and Donald Trump.
Mike, what did you think of Spectre this last week and the fact that their fashion show didn't go so
well? I think last week I said that I could be done with the shenanigans and get down to the business side of it, and so I thought that was a lot better. You know, this week's B&B had a balance of stories, more than one, and they were pretty well featured throughout the week, and when I was watching, the time went by in a fairly quick manner. I was pretty pleased with this week's B&B, and I liked right? Put it on record.
Hold up. Now, I done told y'all, I sound like I smoked some cigs, and my hearing is a little fucked up in one ear, but what you just say, Mike?
I said this week's B&B was pretty decent. I was pretty happy with it.
Loopy on my meds. Wow.
I like it when you can do, like, if you can write more than one story. And, there were like three.
That's not a very high bar for B&B to climb.
You know, that should be a low bar requirement for us.
Yeah, that's a
right
really
now,
low
yeah
bar.
Okay, well, yeah, all right, here's the
no
thing.
No, you're right, though.
Like, Sally had their, they had their fashion show. Jarrett is in the pocket of Bill. Bill wants the building. And yes, he was a little bit mustache twirling. But you know what? Bill wants focused on sitting in Brooke's kitchen for a ham sandwich. So I was okay with it. And the fact is that this guy, Jarrett, who's been on for a while, he feels like his journalistic, he's being compromised. So there's that thing where, and they didn't wrap it up in like two episodes. So, and that Thomas was there to figure out that, and Thomas had the best line when he said, "That's bitchy, even for Jarrett." So,
that
yeah,
was a good
so
line.
I mean,
that was a
good
line.
It was good.
Meanwhile, Jillian, Ridge, and Quinn are really struggling.
Gross. It's disgusting. They're overanalyzing their freaking kiss. I'm sorry. I'm f-bombing. Sorry.
It's go for the jugular, honey. It is. It's like,
okay.
Oh
some
my God. He kissed you. You act as though he like felt you up in the closet. Like, calm down. Like, give me a break. This whole B&B just kind of like confuses me because on the one hand, they have them overanalyzing and deciphering and decoding and decrypting this damn kiss, right? They'll do that on one hand. But on the other hand, they have, like, Thomas and Sally acting as though, like, and with Wyatt and Liam and Steffi, y'all just got together 2 minutes ago, and y'all are acting like this end-all, the be-all couple. It's, like, it's kind of, like, kind of wonky when they do that.
And I do think that Steffi was overly – the Thomas and Steffi thing is overly done for me, too.
Ooh.
Well, and RJ this last week, Jamie,
the wedding
was watching whisperer. RJ it about the weddings, and I was just like,
someone needs to get that
for a show that does not believe in having the young adult cast have any side life other than one date and we're married. They're already starting that with RJ, and it was just painful to watch. What did you think, Jamie?
I think every writer writing for daytime needs to start watching Blackish, every show on Freeform, and well, the CW really wouldn't help him except for Riverdale, because
Riverdale I am so good. We discussed it on this week's Geek Confidential podcast.
I'm like, did you people raise teenagers? I know the Bells did. It's like RJ, you know, hopefully that's about to change because Sally has a little sister. So maybe, you know, he'll need to run out and buy some Vaseline and, you know, some extra tissue paper because she'll
excited.
What is wrong
with
you? And then he'll go jack off instead of thinking about his parents' marriage all the time. Like teenage, when I was that age, I couldn't wait for my grandparents to go pay bills so that I could go have
Brooke's
some free masturbation time. When you're 16-year-old boy, that is all you're thinking about. Blackish just did a story arc about, well, not a story arc about that, but Blackish did an episode where, you know, Rainbow wanted to know more about her children, and she wanted to know that they cut, you know, because she found out that the neighbor kids cussed, and she was like, well, I don't want them not cuss, you know, I want them to feel free to cuss in front of me, and of course, the big mama was like, girl, you crazy, gonna let these kids cuss.
And no shit, that's the white side of her. I'm like, that's the white side of it.
And, you know, I love that, though, but, you know, she was like, I want these kids to be free to tell me anything. And so she was like, so the little boy is, I guess he's really horny on the show. I don't watch it that much, but I watched this episode and it was hilarious.
Oh my God, you need to watch.
I just found out it's why really he good. Uses so much lotion. Are not revolutionary, they're universal to the teenage experience. It's sad that when I watch YouTube videos of Tad the Cad bragging about boning Lila and her mother on YouTube on all my children from the 80s, that feels more relevant to the teenage experience, because they have him bragging to his little buddy like a dumb teenage boy. That's why those stories always get out, when you have a teenage boy sleeping or a younger boy sleeping with an older woman in real life. It always gets out because the boys brag to their friends, you know, or something like that. These shows, none of them, I'll say YNR is doing the best in at least giving us some characterization with Reed, and he does feel really angsty. But the fact that he's only been interested in having one little girl over to the house to heavy pet, it's like, what? That little boy is so weird. Not the actor. The actor is great, but RJ is the weirdest kid on the planet, that all he exists to do is talk about why his parents need to get married. And then they have him thrown in with these scenes. And I get that they're trying to do this, like, bonding with him and Rick and Zenday. But then he's giving romance advice. I'm like, you don't even have a date. No one has swiped left or right.
Well, and the other thing,
you're like,
the other thing that I found disturbing about it was Brooke's whole thing was, well, after you go on your first date, what girl are you going to bring home
right.
and marry?
Oh, my God.
How do you go from third?
Yes.
What are you?
I mean, it was like.
Wait. Say that again. What was the line?
It was like, I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically like, once you go on your first date, who are you going to come home and marry?
Dialogue ever. Like, the boy.
It was terrible, but yet it personified everything that Bold and the Beautiful does with his characters, because almost no young adult characters ever think about anything other than marriage. Well, if they have Brooke as the mother saying
it would be better if they had a conflict between RJ, who wants Ridge to marry his mother, and Steffi and Thomas.
Steffi is all cool. Brooke, we should have a double wedding.
Yeah, it's no.
That feels weird,
I had a
too.
Problem with that.
Hated the idea of Brooke and her, you know, but that's the thing. Brad, again, you know, Gene and Shelley get the hammer, but we get Brad is.
Brad gets the hammer from someone.
Don't you say?
You, there's a different tone. You be ready to, it's like you a jilted lover with Gene and Shelley. Like you want to chase
her.
Well, but that's because I've always been, I've got more of a history with General Hospital than D&D.
Plot-driven, lazy stuff than anybody. Like, you know, that little boy said to his mama, I don't think I want to get married. And instead of her saying, oh my God, honey, is the fact that I've been married like 10 times and all this dysfunction in our family, has it soured you on marriage? No, she goes, but what if you're just going to take girls to the movies and never marry?
That was the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life.
It was terrible. It was literally the worst dialogue of the week. If we had a segment, that would win it.
I know you're 16, but you should already be thinking about marriage because, and think about a location wedding. Go on a location wedding and then let whoever you used to date know that you're going so that they can stop the wedding, honey. These are family traditions. I mean, Brooke has become a robot. She sits there. She has no purpose on this show anymore. And y'all know that's my favorite character. I'm Bold and the Beautiful, one of my all-time favorite characters. But she has been destroyed. Brooke Logan is now a brainless person who just sits there and fields marriage proposals. Yeah, they had the obligatory scene of her sitting in Steffi's office because now they only have a set for one office space on Bold, and none of them have their own offices anymore. So they have her in there with some papers. So, oh, Brooke's at work. We don't know what Brooke does anymore now since Steffi's the CEO and Ridge is the co-CEO. It's like, well, what is Brooke's not a designer. What is Brooke even doing there? You know, but she's there, and then Steffi's like, we should have a double wedding. Oh, we should! And then Brooke says in front of Steffi and RJ, I do have to say, though, that both Bill and Ridge have been completely faithful to me. Why would Steffi keep the bigger man being faithful to you when you're engaged to her father? This is stupid shit! It's really stupid!
Yeah, like, RJ and Steffi should be like, who the fuck cares, Ma?
This is dribble. Brad is writing the most base dribble I have ever seen, and it's like, what are you? It's like they're just all Barbie people. You know, it used to be a joke in the industry, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it was an urban legend that James E. Reilly used to play with Barbie dolls, and like I said, this is a rumor, but that he would act out the story.
It's urban legend.
That he would act out the storylines in his office with Barbie dolls, and I'm sure that that's just BS from a hater. But that's what it seems like Brad really does. Like he has a blonde, and then he has Barbie, G.I. Joe, and Ken, and you know, G.I. Joe is Bill, and Ken is Ridge, and then a brown Midge is Quinn. No, I'm going to marry Rich.
Taylor.
You used to when you played Barbie with your cousins. You know, he's holding Barbie. And, you know, when Barbie talks, she's bouncing up and down. Because, you know, that's how you play dolls when you're a little kid. No, I'm going to marry Bill. No, I'm going to marry. It's like that is what we're getting on this show.
Jillian, what did you think of Devon and Hillary this last week?
I think he just needs to get over it. Devon is such a self-righteous little fuck. Like, she just made her fall downstairs, y'all. Act like she made that girl fall down and was pregnant when she fell. Like, get over it. Grow the fuck up. Shit.
Mike, what are you thinking of?
He gotta go. He gotta die.
Exactly.
Well.
Okay,
I know how much
just
I know.
Off that show. Keep
and
going.
I know
you're right. No,
then you have two options.
Her personal favorites.
You have two options then, Jess Walton. I would sign her onto a contract, and if she trips, I'd be like, Jane Elliott ain't no happy over at GH. The role of Jill is now being played by Jane Elliott.
And our fans would have a new fit.
They're too damn bad.
You are not thinking like a business person because that is one of the most popular characters. You can't have a flashback with Jane Elliott.
You can't
recast Jill at this point.
You cannot do what they did with the scenes with Jill.
Since we only have a few minutes left, there's no need to rehash that. It's a stalemate. Y'all want him dead. That's noted. We talked about it last week. That is one of the main reasons Jess Walton will agree to come on and do the show is because she likes working with him.
I don't want him dead. I just, like, after all this soul searching she did this week, she knows what kind of man she married, and she has to reconcile whether it's worth her to stay with him. But
now, in real life, of course, she robbed
his mind. I'd be okay with her taking a break from him. Him and Kane, actually, I could take a break from both of them.
Now, let me say this, though, because a lot of times what I see with soap operas, because I see this a lot, like I saw this in the comments when people were talking about the Victoria thing with Reed a few weeks ago. And a lot of mothers chimed in and were like, he needs to mind his mama. Reed needs to mind his mama.
Yes,
and I'm like, we do this as soap fans sometimes. Sure. In real life,
a boy should mind his mama. But if our child, Tad the Cad didn't become Tad the Cad because he minded his mama. On a soap opera, yes, it would be cool if Jill was married to a sturdy accountant who was very nice to her. But that's not very dramatic. That's not going to lead to a lot of drama. If she's
I get it. But she can walk away from him for like a minute. That's all.
I've never been a Colin. I've never been a Colin fan. So
neither, none of us are. But I will say, like, they enjoy working together. And well, I don't care what Tristan wants about Y&R. I care about what he wants related to GH. But
yes, I'm take like, your ass to poor Charles.
If this is what it takes for me to get my Jess Walton on this show and happy, I can tolerate Colin. I can.
No.
I mean, and it led to a really juicy story. You know, my only big problem is that both Colin and off-screen Gary Ewan snatched up their wives' fortunes.
Yes, and just Jill is-
me, that was like, okay, if you were going to bring Gloria back and say that Jeffrey absconded with her money, then you might not have wanted to do the same thing with Colin, because that's just overkill. That's just like telling this. So basically, all women of a certain age in Genoa City are stupid and don't pay attention to their
Jill
account.
Is smarter than that. Jill, we all...
Gloria is smarter because she's got
Gloria, no, Jill still got some paper. Jill still has a house and a couple of businesses.
But hold on, I'm confused. Wait. I'm confused. He took all of her money. So what happened to the money Victoria gave her?
That money. No, she...
There's the difference between personal money
Well, I never really understood it, but now they are trying to say that, you know, that was a subsidiary of Chancellor, I guess. I don't know.
Oh,
but
maybe Jill, it's Devon's money. Shit, I don't know.
Well, you know, Jill still owns Chancellor Industries, and she still owns 25.5, I guess, percent of Fenmore's. But if Fenmore's is in the red, you know, she owns, you know, half and, you know, a quarter or nothing. But yeah, so I mean, she's still, but she owes a loan on, so she's getting a salary as the CEO of Chancellor, if we're going realistic. I mean, I'll say this though, what she, you know, as much as I didn't like that they did both of the stories at the same time, that's a minor gripe, because Jill's story has been amazing, and I feel that it is dovetailed into so many good stories. You know, the battle for Fenmore's, and now, you know, Lauren having her victory over that, and then finding out Scotty's missing, and, you know, the two sisters who don't call themselves sisters anymore, if you've noticed. Sally keeps having them refer to each other as business.
Sally is pulling a Bob Guza. It never happened.
Sally's pulling a Mariah whenever somebody mentions them being sisters.
I don't know her.
But, I feel that it is dovetailed into some really good organic stories, because, you know, Lauren should have been in a celebratory mode, and then she finds out that Scotty is missing. And kudos to Scotty having been off writing stories about the refugee crisis. I'm like, I know how much these soap people watch the news, because all of them are tweeting about Donald Trump every day. And I'm like, it's my fervent prayer that the spirit of Agnes Nixon will visit them on a holy night, like the Holy Spirit did Mary, and say, Jean, it's me, Agnes. Hey, girl. I know you want to bring somebody else back from the dead, but scratch that, girl. I know you're paying attention to the world, Jean. Pitch stories that take on Trump, Jean. You can do it, Jean. I had a black woman passing for white in 1968, Jean. You think that was easy to get pitched? Come on, Jean. Buck up, girl. And then her spirit needs to float on over to Brad. Brad. More people than white people like to go to Australia, Brad. Agnes and Bill and Erna.
Bill needs to come to Brad and say, son, get it together.
I need them in heaven realizing, you know, like Claire just showed. So Claire will be like, hey, y'all, how's it down there? How are our beloved shows? Are there still 16? Are they still funding pilot season? Well, about that, no. Well, you know, we're in heaven, so we can't see anything ugly and bad. What's going on? Oh, it's bad, y'all.
we got to go back. We got to go back. And then they basically become this Touched by an Angel soap squad. Doug Marlon, Agnes, Bill, they just all need to disperse from Soap Heaven at once and fucking show up. And look, I was being nice at that first one, but go ahead and haunt somebody if you have to. If you're really showing out, like with Dita, I need somebody to just scream and bring howling monkeys from hell.
Don't worry, she's never coming back.
Chase her through the night. I'm like, get y'all shit together.
And on that note, and that will be the title of the podcast, Touched by an Angel Super Soap Squad. On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DCConfidential. You can find Mike at on Twitter at MPJ24. Jamie is at Jamie_Giddens. Jillian is at Jillian Bow. And
shall I know I'm not.
Kerr.
I'm in my bed wrapped up in four blankets and it's 69 degrees outside. Shit, I'm dying.
We thank you for listening. Until next time, and that pack of cigarettes, she's not
going to chuck this pack of cigarettes right at your fat head.